Welcome to the No Direction Podcast, PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage. Remember, we con when you can't.
Don't bump the table.
Sarah.
All right, Sarah, who are you?
Sarah Robinson, the creative director, creative design director for Pathfinder.
And I'm James Jacobs, I'm the creative director for Pathfinder. And this is the art preview.
Sure.
That I am now here because of the last minute switcheroo.
Yep.
So what do you want me to do, Sarah?
Well, I think we're previewing the Book of the Dam that is going to be out in
September.
September, and this is the book of all the last past 3 weeks of the Dam, right?
Yeah, we took the previous soft cover Books of the Damned, which are now all out of print, and basically compiled them together. Added what is essentially another 64 pages of content for other fiendish type stuff, and compile it all into a hardcover. And it's actually got a lot more new content than just 64 pages, because a lot of the stuff we did in Book of the Damned, like a lot of the monsters and spells and stuff, have been reprinted since in Bestiaries and other hardcover books. So yeah, it's a 288-page hardcover coming out in September, and it's mostly aimed at GMs with information about archdevils and demon lords and the Horsemen of the Apocalypse. As you can see here, this is a chapter opener, one of the chapter openers for the book, and I'm delighted because this is the first time we've shown the Horsemen of the Apocalypse doing some apocalypsing. Got them all up there doing their thing on their horses, riding around. So yeah. So what's the best way we want to do this? Would we just go through images and I talk about them? And
sure.
Oh my god.
Entertainment. They're all like different styles.
Oh.
So this here is the cover.
Wayne Reynolds cover. We wanted to take basically the characters that were from the first three soft covers. So they've got Octicula and Charon and Dissipator all kind of showing off the Book of the Damned. And what is going on down here? Is this just like a weird symbol going through it?
Sure.
Okay. One of the cool things about Wayne is that he knows the game and he's so into it, and he's one of us. He just throws in these little like prizes and trips and stuff like that. It's fun to like find and all that.
The one thing about this one is there are three different sketches from Wayne, and he had a lot of trouble with Nadia.
Oh, yeah.
Because he wasn't really sure about her pose. So there's one where she was actually kind of sitting, and one was where wasn't very interesting. But this is the third one. Third iteration. He captured her spirit for a while.
Yeah, that's one of the crazy things too about Wayne is, like, as detailed as this gets, he usually does like sketches. They're just as detailed, like 3 or 4 or 5 more sketches. Like, oh, I don't like this one. I can't do that. But I don't like this one. Oh, this one's no good either. And so
that's pretty good.
Yeah. Eric does a better one. Just seeing all of them, it's like these are all rad, but obviously one is the raddest. So we usually go with the raddest one if we can. How do we do we take questions like this as we go, or do we?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So if anybody has any questions, just shoot your hand up, and if I am feeling magnanimous and see any.
Yeah. I take it that's the actual Book of the Damned in front and center.
Yeah. So the Book of the Damned is the oh jeez.
Oh, Sarah, you flatter me.
So the Book of the Damned is kind of a complicated little critter. It's of course the name of this entire book that we're publishing, that you characters will be, you people will have in your hands come September. But it is also an in-world artifact. It's basically, everybody here is familiar with the world lore of the Book of the Damned or not. Anyway. So yeah, that is the actual Book of the Damned, Book of the Damned, all together in one spot. It kind of looks different every time because just as the nature of what is evil and reality continually changes and evolves, the Book of the Damned is like rewriting itself and adding new content and shifting. But it's usually, you know, a pretty creepy looking Facebook.
So for the sketches, do they come one at a time, or he provides multiple and then you pick and then they go through the
round? What he'll usually do is he sends about 3 or 4 thumbnail sketches, which is very, very loose.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually pick the one that has the best composition, and then he will take that to the final sketch.
Okay.
And then he'll start painting.
Sometimes he's like, he does this full, just complicated sketch, and he sends it to the screen. He's like, I don't like how the guy's turned out. Kind of smooched a little bit. So he'll redo the whole thing just because he's not satisfied with it.
Right.
And
so that's the cover.
Yeah.
The book for the DM. And then we have some more.
We have all sorts of characters. One of the things that I wanted to do in the book is, since all of the new demons and new devils and new daemons that appeared in the previous three soft covers, basically, have been, as of Bestiary 6, been reprinted in hardcover books. I didn't want to reprint any of them, so. There's a new bestiary section in the Book of the Damned, and I was able to get in a new type of theme for all, like 12 or 14 categories. And so this is the new Asura, I believe. He's like kind of a dreaded lion guy. yeah, something like that. Asuras are basically, they're lawful evil, kind of like Liko with accents, like if the gods make a mistake or something like that, they manifest as like accidental evils. So. And there is Mr. Beelzebub in his I'm taller than you pose. A lot of these fiendish demigods and outsiders and all that, they have a lot of weird concepts that sound cool when you are writing them, but then it always makes me nervous when we go up to like, I go up to certain, like, all right, so Beelzebub is like this big tall guy, but it's got wings made out of flies. And I always get nervous that, like, that means he's going to have a big pair of fly wings or like two flies stuck on his back. But it's this one, we've never had a problem with getting him to look like he's got like this kind of swarmy, kind of fly wing type stuff going on. And it's gross. This is Dagon, one of the demon lords, and recently seen in Bestiary 4, I believe, statted him up. None of this book won't have any of the actual monster stats. It's not really about that. What it will have is for all of the fiendish demigods, it'll have all of their like worshiper type info, and building off of Intercede Gods, which introduced all these different boons that you can get, like Sentinel boons, Evangelist boons, and Exalted boons. We've got all of that information for every one of these characters in here. So it'll be basically a page of all of that information for NPCs, or if you're running an evil campaign and your character worships Dagon or something like that. Because he's friendly, as you can see. all that information will be in there for all of those major demigods of the outer planes, evil outer planes. And then there's going to be an illustration for all of them, and basically, usually about a page of like flavor text talking about their personality, their goals, their realms, and all that stuff. There's a lot of flavor in this book that is really cool to expand them out. And we didn't want to reprint any of the art that we've already printed before in hardcovers. There's some reprinted art that has only been kind of hidden away in softcover format before. But like Dagon, since he was in Bestiary 6, we wanted it to be people to be pretty angry. this is a new demo band, and one of the things we were looking through for all of the fiends, we kind of have these implied ideas, like every fiend has like a little sort of a familiar level thing, and everyone goes all the way up to the top CR, where it's CR20, and they've got like a boss type creature. And so this is the boss demo band. He's, as you can see, he's like people still, so he's pretty tall. He's the CR20 demo band. Yep. Oh no, I stuck.
Poor guy.
Oh, no, yeah. He's like, all right, my right tummy. So yeah, that guy's Squamous Demon Damned. Covered with scales and leathery hide and wants to break things apart. One of the weird things about this, too, is that the higher CR doesn't necessarily mean they're the bosses. We're keeping the Demon Damned set up so that the Shaggy Demon Damned is kind of the manipulators and the criminal masterminds. These guys are kind of like the ones that follow. But there's a castle over there. We need to pick it up and throw it into the ditch. This is a div who wears a bird for a face mask. Just stop it. But some of this art is kind of creepy, sir. I like their long fingers, like King Ginger. Divs are basically like a corrupted evil genies, so I don't actually remember what this critter's up to, aside from just looking gnarly with it and creepy. This is probably the type of thing that would like hide in your closet. Maybe under your bed, it'll hold it up like a spider.
Hiding in this hotel
spot. Oh, yeah. Or like behind one of those curtains right there. It's like 9 feet tall, it weighs 30 pounds. Here's another chapter opener, which is sort of a what if kind of situation. This is calling all the way back to Rise of the Rune Lord, where we have the character Dualia, who is basically a Azimar, who the town kind of drove crazy, basically. And she's like, I don't want to be half angel, I want to be half demon. So she's been going through these transformation rituals. And what's one of the elements that we cover in here is this ritual of turning yourself into a fiend. And so this is sort of a what-if thing. What if Nualia wasn't defeated by the player characters in Rise of the Rune Lords, and her goblin minions captured Phalaros, and she moved her throne into Sandpoint's Cathedral and is now ruling the town and procuring judgments and stuff like that. So, yeah, this guy looks pretty
sad.
There's another new theme. This is a Oni. So all of the Oni fiends are kind of like these evil spirits that latch on to humanoid types. This is an Oni that is latched onto the Nagashi, which are kind of a reptilian race that lives in Tien Shaw. And they're pretty creepy looking. I mean, that will be a theme that you see going through all of this book when you get it. 95% of the pictures are creepy, and the other 5% look normal until you look really close, and then that's creepy. Which, of course, I quite like. There's one of my favorite guys. That's Tree Razor. And Tree Razor has been a part of my campaign setting since 1988, 89. And one of the things that I've always enjoyed doing is dropping critters that I've invented ages and ages ago, and I even have drawn pictures of this. I don't think I've ever sent you my drawings. That would be too much. So, what is this? No. Demon dinosaur type thing, which it's people who know me would be shocked that I would mix those two flavors. He doesn't like elves. He likes chopping down trees. He's covered with fungus spores. That is one of the four horsemen, Trelmoraxian, horseman of famine. And this is a case, I think Todd is at the show, but I don't think he's in here, which is too bad. He would have been squealing that. But this character is one that, Todd is super creative at coming up with these creepy designs and stuff like that. He's got a biology, science, medicine background, so he treats a lot of this stuff like diseases and stuff like that right then. And so his descriptions of Trelmoraxian is like, he doesn't really have a shape, he can be whatever he wants, his skin slides around, and it's like, that's great, but we can't illustrate that, we need a picture of something. So it's kind of like pulling teeth, and it's like, what does he look like? And so we finally got this sort of emaciated three-faced jackal humanoid, and he's gone through a couple of iterations. This one I think is my favorite of them so far, because we've got all of these souls that he wraps himself up in, it's like kind of armor.
Yep, you said he was famine?
Yeah.
Taking notes from my other half, it wouldn't make it
bigger. All four of the horsemen actually are also statted up in Bestiary 6, which is available at the show right now.
Really?
Yeah, so you can go ahead and grab all of that stuff. And they're all in there. I think Trelmoraxian is CR-27. He's the wimpiest one. Yeah, he's the wimpiest one, because he's brand new. But still, CR-27 is probably the
top. Yeah.
This is a section opener for Abaddon, which is kind of the neutral evil plane. We've got the River Styx flows through here, and the theme of this plane is where your soul ends up here. You get hunted throughout this swampy, nasty realm, and if you don't get eaten, it's because you sacrificed your friends to like be eaten so you can get away, and that means you get more and more evil, and maybe if you're lucky, you turn into one of these guys driving the boat around. Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to be fast. You just have to be faster than your friends.
Faster than the dwarf.
That's why, yeah, usually it's good to have a dwarf in the party. Because you got a little bit. Another chapter over, this is High Mavania, which is Pazuzu's realm, which is this crazy city built in the side of an eternal cliffside. He's the demon lord of all the flying creatures, so there's all these flying demons flying around trying to get his attention. Yeah, just sometimes get distracted. There's all this blood root for him. Oh, yes!
Waterfalls.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, they do. Looks like somebody grabbing onto the cage here. Something like this is, when we do an art order, it's kind of this give and take type thing, because when we have, like, want to illustrate something like a city like this, it's like, oh, there's a city with blood waterfalls, and thousands of demons are flying around, and there's heroes fighting, and people falling off cliffs, and we send that up to Sarah, and it's like six paragraphs long, she's like, no, this needs to be,
three sentences.
Yeah, three sentences, because, when you get an artist working on a piece, it's what we want from them is we want their inspiration, we want their talent. We don't want to, you know, micromanage them and start micromanaging them. It frustrates people. And so something like this, what I will do for the art read, is I'll say something. This is a city of creepy block towers built into a cliffside. There's flying demons above and blood waterfalls. And that's basically it. In cases where it's like something we've illustrated before, if this is a city we've illustrated before, for example, we might just say, this is a new look at this city, and that's it. And just let the artist see this image and then go from there. Oh, now we're lost. That's it, right?
That's no. It for the Book of the Damned.
Oh, okay.
And I just want to say that Sonia Morris over here, she's actual art director on the Book of the Damned, so I just want to give
that
she's
awesome job at Yay! Wait a minute. What's going on here? He's got some carved into his face.
I bet those rings mean something.
I'm sure they do. Wayne knows, like, this guy is in here because he tripped and fell off the bus. And he grabbed onto an old lady when he was falling and pulled her to his death and made him move. Yeah, that's like such a fun.
Yeah, what is that?
It might be, so Nocticula's weapon is a crossbow, like a hand crossbow. And so that kind of looks like, I mean, that's the type of thing that Wayne does. It's like, we wouldn't ask him to have a hand crossbow, but he'll go through the books and find out that her favorite weapon is a hand crossbow.
She's holding it in one of her tails.
She's got it in one of her tails, so I think it's just a crazy crossbow that she's ready to shoot you with.
Yeah, that's her iconic crossbow.
Yeah.
Dude,
that's awesome. Yeah, it's pretty gnarly.
Here's her garter belt.
That's her garter belt. Yeah, her crossbow can like kill demons. You don't want to challenge. Why do these guys over here have their? Oh no! See, that's another detail from Wayne. Since these guys are below Charon,
he was coins.
Yeah, they got the coins on their eyes because these are his.
Oh, fire!
He knows what he's doing. We should hire him more often.
How many artists contribute to a book of this size?
I think I used about 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
Find your own luck. Like.
Alright,
what else
we have a little bit more.
Chapter. Oh, yeah, there's more chapter overs. This is basically what happens when your GM gets the Book of the Damned. And he wanted to basically go down shopping in like the local farm community or something like that. Like, no, I want hell. And it opens up in the sky and drops all these devils down on it.
Give us your eggs.
And this is another case, since these are chapter openers and we run them as like a whole spread over two pages, there's a lot more and since we use more money and all of that, we can get a lot crazier. Rather than say this is a devil fighting Valoros in a dark room. Like, this is all the devils of hell coming out of a hole in the sky to attack a farm. And then we'll probably send, like, there's bearded devils and house devils and a horned devil and an Arrhenius. And we'll send, like, pictures from the bestiaries and all that as reference. But then we won't really tell the artist, you know, how to stage it and all that. Just, like, make sure that it's One thing we joke around a lot. There's all sorts of mayhem going on here. Oh yeah, and this is the Angel Tabris, who is the person who just wrote the Book of the Damned. He was basically told by his boss in heaven to go out and make catalogs of all of the things in reality so that we know what is out there. And so he did that for the good planes and the neutral planes, and then he went to the evil planes. He got a little too into it and came back like, I wrote this book! And it happened with like, dude, you went too far. Like, whoa. Yeah, and they basically exiled him. And the Book of the Damned is kind of its own thing now. It's doing its own thing, writing itself. And he looks like he's enjoyed himself, though. Right? He's smiling.
I think that's just part of his face.
No. That just means he has to smile harder.
Is that a reference from the editorial pit?
Is that a reference from the editorial pit? Yeah, kind of. Write more. Write faster.
All right, so that's it for. So then we have.
Ruins of Aslantis. That's an upcoming adventure path. We'll be talking more about the adventure path tomorrow morning, I think at 10. There's an adventure path Q&A. This is being basically headed up by Adam Daigle. And this is the first adventure path that he's basically started from the very start. He's been working on the adventure path for years and years and years. But this one was basically, he wanted to do something where it's like, kind of go explore Aslan, explore this lost continent, and there's a lot of aquatic stuff going on here, as you can see this sort of situation here. We got a lot of stuff. Oh, there's also going to be spoilers, so I'll try to keep them light. But obviously there's these faceless stalkers lurking in this flooded dungeon with some sort of tentacles coming at them. Pretty black tentacles.
Yeah.
And this is particularly neat because this is the first time I've seen a lot of stars, so I'm kind of distracted.
Pretty cool.
Who's is this? Is this Renko?
No, this is the teal one.
So for the two-page spreads, do you have pre-established, like, this is where the text is going to go, and then, or it's just completely art?
They have been 3/4 page of art, and then we have another maybe a little bit of descriptive text, and now we're just getting rid of that text and just showing off the art, so full page, full spread.
Yeah, those little art swaths down the, or the text down the side was something we kept doing at the very last minute, and it was kind of, we basically moved it over, like, you know, the art is
more
what
important.
It's really what's going on here. And so, yeah, it's just a full on, full spread. We do tinker around with it like we did with the opener in Curse of the Crimson Pearl. We had this swath of art and a little bit of text down in the corner. So it's going to be something like we've been doing a lot of really templated stuff for a while. And I know you, Sarah, are interested in like, pushing boundaries and trying out new things. So what you see in one book may not be what we do in the next book, but hopefully what we do in the next book will be better because it's like we get an idea of like. I wish Adam were here.
She's the first character.
Oh, she's like an ally that you are working with. Oh, she's on the cover too,
right? She's on the cover.
Yeah, so the basic plot that starts out Ruins of Aslan is there's a colony on this ancient island out in the ocean. And you are part of the group of people, the second group, going out to figure out what happened to the first colony, which nobody has heard from before. So I'm sure that they're just like, their mail is logged, their backlog or something like that. It's perfectly safe. But no, it's not. You get there and the entire colony has been abandoned. And I believe she's one of the, you're not necessarily a commander, but sort of like your initial first ally in DC.
Jenny?
Yeah.
Does she have a name yet?
I'm sure she does.
Okay.
Again, I mean, I'm not actually involved in doing this adventure path, so it's kind of exciting for me too because I've been working on adventure paths for so long and now it's like they're doing their own thing. I'm like, this sort of situation here is. That is obviously a high level Kraken that has many guides. That's pretty crazy. It, which cover is this for?
I don't know.
We just like art.
We just like art.
It's pretty,
I thought it was
I like
pretty
this
awesome.
Here.
What, this is like
That is really cool. There's going to be a lot of, we're also doing an Aquatic Avengers book at around this time to basically help people, you know, run underwater encounters and adventures and stuff like that. There's going to be a lot of that. You better, like, have somebody in your party to catch water. This one's the cover of the first one, and it's always, for a lot of the covers of Venture Pass, the composition is kind of weird, because we usually have a character going on right in this section here, so it's neat to see them without the character there. You get to see all of this, like, cool background. And sometimes I just like having, like, kind of off something like that. It makes it look like it's more action packed because the camera wasn't able to
right.
Center or whatever, and Marissa was control that guy. That's some sort of creepy lady. That crown, she's probably the queen. I don't know. Oh my god!
Oh,
so that's a Luska, which is a three-headed sharktopus.
Sharktopus?
Yeah. So the thing that is pretty cool about this creature is, one of the things that I really love about doing monsters and stuff like that is not creating monsters out of the blue. That's fun, obviously. But it's also just as exciting, like, going into weird mythologies and cryptozoology and stuff like that, finding monsters that have been existing in folklore and society. So the Luska is supposedly a giant shark or octopus or shark octopus that lives in, like, these deep blue holes in the Bahamas. So this is actually from, like, Bahama, like, Caribbean cryptozoology and folklore, this creature. So that might be real!
Wasn't that in like, Skull and Shackles?
Yeah, we put them in first in the Skull and Shackles. I believe it was in the Skull and Shackles support book, the Pirates of the Shackles.
Yeah, Dreadnought players.
Yeah,
they're too cool enough to use more than one.
Yeah, they're pretty powerful. And Russell's fine. there's also going to be some of these guys in the Adventure Path. In fact, there's going to be a lot of Avalon stuff going on in the Adventure Path. And that's in part why a lot of the Avalon, like, masterminds and overlords and stuff like that, like the Omnipath and the Veiled Master and all that, we've statted them up before in other books. But they're super complicated, so getting them into Bestiary 6 was one of the main reasons I was pushing to do Bestiary 6 in the first place, so that way Adam can basically throw these things into his Adventure Path, use really short stat blocks, and have more room for story and development and stuff like that.
These are just characters.
Okay, so that's like a Merkle. I think there's one adventure where you go into an underwater city. And again, if you're more interested in the plot for Ruins of Badland, definitely show up tomorrow at 10 o'clock. I don't know. It's in one of these rooms.
Oh, the rooms. I think it's actually this one.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll just, yeah. Good. This guy.
24 hours.
This guy is a dude with a crossbow. I wish Adam was here. His name is Arcturus Ravenstein. He's wears his father's breastplate and is a sailor and once fell off a boat and almost sunk, but he wasn't going to take the breastplate off because it's narrow. So that's Ezran, like, making a poor life decision and forgetting to ask why, but he doesn't care because he's going to fireball that jewel on the way down. And then Valoros is just going to die. He's like, no! Don't forget me! And, as usual, Mauricio is somewhere safe. He's like right here. Kind of
laughing. And that's it.
There we go.
And so we have about 15 minutes. If there's any questions or...
Yeah, questions about art or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one that I'm not sharing with my players when I go home and report all of this.
Oh, I mean, that's another thing, too, is you can certainly do that and not share them in the spring with a surprise, but I always think of, like, art and, like, the little blurbs you put on the back is not so much spoilers as our version of movie trailers.
Mm-hmm.
And so if your players don't know that there's going to be crazy stuff like this coming up, they're not really going to be, you know, anticipating. We're going to have to deal with a shark post at some point.
Yeah.
You certainly, I mean, it's going to be on the cover. think, is this a cover piece?
These are all covers.
It is all covers. So you're going to have to be pretty cagey about policing there. Right?
Yeah,
use.
I've already been cagey with the cover of Strange Aeon 6.
Yeah.
With the Eiffel Tower right there.
Yep. Well, now you spoil it for everybody in the room. Ironically. No, but that's true. I personally think that having players see those images and knowing a little bit about what they're getting into really kind of drives them to be more interested. And if they know, for example, that there's going to be stuff like this going on, they're not going to make, I got to make a desert raider who's afraid of water and is allergic to moisture. and you'll still get players that want to do that once they realize what's going on because they're troublemakers. But letting the players know what they're getting into can drive excitement, can drive inspiration and all that. So, I mean, this, if they, for example, if you did show them this image, just like what their appetites, you might have a player say something. Yeah, you might have a player say something like, well, my father was out as a sailor and he was killed by a Luska and I hate them. I want to make a character that at some point is going to be able to kill a Luska. And just because they know this is happening, that's not going to give them really an advantage. Because look at this stuff. Grabbers and teeth and sharks and octopuses, yeah, they go right in there, and that's it.
Bring Mountain Dew.
Oh, yeah. Surge! It's like singing three times over. Why are his mouth so open? That's a good way to, like, get a fly. Just fly in there. No, she's fine. She's like, ha 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 ha! Scam.
Controlling the water there, it looks like.
I think it's just flashing like bubble bath.
You ever have a situation where like the art comes before the stat block, like someone draws something really cool, they give it to like the developers, they're like, okay, we need to make something for this?
Oh yeah, all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the real heroes of the entire Pathfinder team.
It's really, I mean, it's kind of tricky because what we often do is we'll have the writer basically wants to create a character like, all right, do this. We know you're going to make say a woman who's good at crossbows and is an explorer, and then we'll send off the art reference. Like, this is a human female with a crossbow, she's got a telescope, and she should look like she's ready to explore a deserted island. And that's kind of the whole thing that's going on. Can you go back to that third one shot of that movie? Yeah. So she'll come in. And she certainly looks like an explorer type character. But say we ordered a crossbow, for example, and she comes in with a bow and a sword and all of that. If this art came in, I mean, and it looks cool, in that case, what we'll often do is we'll just fix the character so that now she uses a bow instead of a crossbow. A lot of that stuff is basically the developer's job as part of developing the adventure and all of that. The developer's the one that orders does the art group. And has basically the job to translate what's going on in the art back into the text. And specifically for an adventure path, we ordered the covers about the same time we ordered the art, or ordered the words, and that's usually anywhere between 6 to 9 months in advance of when we're going to be working on the book. So something like this is we will send, as part of the writer's outline, we'll send that art with it. So they'll know that this basic description of a character will be their character's, you know, point of contact. And then go back one to another, one of the openers. And then we'll say something like, there's a scene where the player characters have to fight Chul on near a waterfall. And so they'll have to basically put into the encounter this type of situation. That can sometimes backfire on us too. So one of my favorite stories about that was back in Council of Thieves, we had this whole idea for like this whole story arc, and we're going to go up to 19th level or something like that. And it was the first Pathfinder adventure. And we ordered all the art way ahead of time. And in the second to last adventure, was like, let's have them fighting a six armed stone golem inside of a treasure vault. And that art came in really cool. And, okay, this is rad. They're fighting a six-armed stone golem. Because at that point, we thought the player characters were going to be about 15th level. This is the second to last adventure. And we weren't as familiar with how Pathfinder's experience point progression worked at that point. So everything was kind of slowed down further than we were participating. So by the time we get to that adventure, the player characters were, I think, 11th level or something like that. And in that case, a stone golem is a really tough fight. When you give them four extra sets of arms, they're just going to destroy the party. So I was like, oh no. But put one in here and then have every party get TDK'd by a six-armed stone golem. And so I kind of had a panic moment, because by the time this came in and I realized what was going on, we didn't have a lot more time before we were going to print. And so I went up to Sarah and was like, so can we get a body shot of that thing just done? A body shot is just like a plain old, no background, like that. And then we'll just write up a new monster. That's how the Calicang basically came to be, as a kind of a six-armed, bulky treasure guardian thing. Not quite as powerful as a stone golem with six arms, but then I don't remember if I hired somebody to write the monster at the last minute, or I wrote it, but that was a case where we already had the art and no idea what it did, and we gave it to the designer and said, make this monster into a CR. Good luck, because it's big, muscular, and has six arms. It's going to be tough and make it balanced. But yeah, so that's something we do every now and then. We'll have the art first game, the stats. I think that answered
So the artwork itself, I assume all digital, and then is it layered? So if you were like, oh, we actually do want the crossbow, you can swap that out? Or?
No, it usually comes pretty flat.
Okay.
If there's any changes, then we'll go back to the layer. But I try to avoid that, because when they say it's approved, it's approved.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's when those layers come in and try to change the words to match the art.
And sometimes we'll have to do like just last minute, like mechanic mode. Like for Best Series 6, we have these creatures called the Anthropos, which are basically the people that turn into bugs. And we had a really cool picture of a mantis as a monk, because praying mantis, obviously. this mantis was like in this kung fu pose like that, with wings sticking out the back. And it was really a great piece of art. And it was all kind of, but it came in really wide. And so anybody who's seen a lycanthrope type stat block knows there's two of those on a page, and there was just no way that was going to fit. So I had to work with Sonya to basically crop out the wings at the last minute. So all of a sudden, this thing that used to be able to fly couldn't fly. So then I had to go back in, and it barely fit at that point. So that's good. But then I had to go back in and fix the design so that if you were a CR3 or lower anthrope, you don't gain the fly ability, because that way we don't have something with wings that can't fly. And as it works out, that's actually worked out pretty well, because you don't want things below CR3 really being able to fly and do comfortably, because it's kind of up there. So yeah, it's pretty tricky. And then like Wayne is all not digital at all.
No. Yeah, I use artists that aren't digital. Many volunteers, well, he uses acrylic. That's something that can't have him go back and change.
Yeah, if we need him to change something, he has to paint over it, and so that's
and the trail next to me and the there were two pieces in the book of the dance stuff, but that's coincidental.
That's coincidental, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've always actually really been a fan of the color pencil, because it just looks so, you can get so much detail in there if you know what you're doing. If I try it, you just color
pencil. The one that had the blue black, the blue undershading.
Yeah. You just have to really know what you're doing ahead of time. It's cool. And we know how big the original was?
I think he's working on a fairly large piece of paper, because the sketches he sends me, I think like sometimes his hands are.
Oh, that's right.
And
was he the one that like drew little messages like, why do I have so many chains?
No,
it's hard to draw hands. Why do I have four hands?
That was actually the artist that did the creepy bird face lady.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No. Yeah, there we go.
That one?
That one. Anyway, more questions?
Yeah, I was always curious, like, for the art requests. Do you guys do the same process for, like, maps and city maps and stuff like that, or is that separate?
Maps are, oh my god. So for maps, more so than the art, the maps need to match the orders, because, you know, they've got all of these different, that really, like, it affects, like, how combats play out and how creatures are working and all that. So when we have somebody write an adventure, the person writing the adventure has to create the maps for that adventure. And what we then do is we get the maps in, and if all goes well, we'll just take those hand-drawn maps from the author and send it off to a cartographer, usually Robert Lazaretti, who's just super talented at like, reading these maps.
And he's been in business for forever.
Yeah, he knows. And that's basically how it works. But the problem is, a lot of the people we hire to write adventures are writers. That doesn't mean they're artists. And a lot of the times, these maps come in and they look like somebody dropped their pencils on the ground, and it's just a tangled mess. And I'd say probably half the time, the person developing, myself or Adam or somebody, has to redraw the map from scratch. And so that can be really, really just frustrating, time-consuming thing. So authors who can do really good maps generally get more work as adventure writers. And if you're looking to write an adventure, my advice to you is to really practice, get good at drawing maps. Just buy like a sketch pad of graph paper, and like when you're watching TV, just draw maps in your off time. See maps that you like in a print product or something, copy it by hand, and you just will get good at it.
Yeah.
So one of the things I really, really, really love the GM is the cover art and the splat art, like the half page or full page stuff in the adventure paths. Mm-hmm. I've had a really difficult time like presenting those to my players while I'm running a game, saying, "Yeah, this is sort of what it looks like." Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice for how I could do that and make it flow more naturally than throwing it down and saying, "Look at this"?
What I generally do in that kind of case is I'll use like an iPad if you've got that as an option. Mm-hmm. Get the PDF. And then you can basically either zoom in on a PDF and just show that up there, or you can like copy it out and do a small file or something like that. Or you can just print them out, and that actually works really well too. Is you'll know what set of encounters. I mean, of course, mm-hmm. that uses up a lot of printering, but that's something you can certainly do.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I meant like as far as like actually do I slip it out onto the table or like just show them and say, hey, this is what it looks like. Or
I would just like hold up the iPad, like here's what you see.
Cool.
Kind of, one thing I've actually done, I do this a lot for like NPCs because it's really hard if you have an adventure with a lot of characters in there, and not so much like here's the fight,
mm-hmm.
but there's like six different merchants, and they're all important, like a murder mystery or something like that. So I'll print out copies of them, and then I'll paperclip them to the GM screen, so that the entire time the campaign's going, I'll have like a piece of paper that I'll just hang on the wall or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that keeps those things right there up in the center, and you can say like, all right, well, Jongo Turgensen is talking now, and that's not Jongo Lankazen, because he looks like this guy and helps the player characters keep track of who they are.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have time for one more question.
One.
There we go, and we're done.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you,
everyone. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the No Direction Podcast PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage, made possible with the help of Justin Sluder and Ryan Hiller of Geek Dad. To find more great Pathfinder audio, go to No Direction Podcast.